Hello and welcome to the Property Roundup here on iProperty Radio with myself, Carol Tallon, the show where we chat to industry experts to get a view on activity on the ground and to learn about new trends emerging. This show is sponsored by daft.ie, Ireland's most visited property website. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Kevin Curran, estate agent with Curran Auctioneering in Galway and Mayo. Kevin, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Carol. Thanks for having me.
So I mentioned there you have offices in Galway and Mayo. That's a huge spread. That's a huge spread of the west of Ireland. Where exactly? What geographies are you operating in exactly?
I live in a little village, Clonfad, County Roscommon. So actually, that's where the three counties meet. I just spent a lot of my younger life in construction. So I 20 years, and I'm mostly operating in Galway City. As I said, Clonfad is County Roscommon, but when I go to town, I go to Ballyhonus, County Mayo, and when I went to school, I went to Dunmore, County Galway. So genuinely, we have a toe in three counties, and as I said, we opened the office in Ballyhonus first. That office did very well, which enabled us to open an office in Galway. The plan would have been to grow Galway a lot more, but it's actually Ballyhonus is the office that has really taken off for us. And again, yeah, it means we travel more, but at the same time, we do a lot more business.
Very good. And look, I want to talk about the different marketplaces, because look, it's always one of my frustration when we're looking at property reports and we have Dublin and outside of Dublin, when we know outside of Dublin, like the regional differences in the marketplace can be so huge. So I want to get into that. But first of all, how does somebody go from kind of a couple of decades in construction to property?
Well, quite simple, to be honest with you. I bought into property, got involved in property. I had a lot of friends in Galway that had property, and they weren't that particularly, how would I say, good at looking after it. And because of my construction background, properties would be left idle and that, and I put in and started kicking out properties for people and refurbing properties, things like that, and then started letting properties. And suddenly then I found myself selling development sites, where I had worked with small builders who had become slightly bigger builders, the slightly bigger ones had become well-known. And they got self-important and didn't want to speak to each other. And I didn't mind. I was big in the middle, so I benefited on at every end. And basically, we started selling development sites. And yeah, somebody said to me one day, you know, you need a license for this. So I said, okay, we better get ourselves in line. And we did. And the development sites, you see, once you sold a development site, you'd get houses to sell afterwards. And it worked out really well. But again, we were probably late into the game. It was 04 before I got started. We had just got going right in 06 when it all kind of stopped very fast. And then we had to make a decision, because both sides of my businesses went, construction went and the auctioneering went. But we dived quickly into the rental market. And we basically used the rental market to get us through the tougher times.
And in recent years, was there a temptation there, and not even maybe commercially driven, but was there a temptation when secondhand stock was drying up, new homes weren't coming through? Was there a temptation kind of to dip your toe back into the development market or into the construction market?
Yes and no. I won't lie, we got burned in 2008, badly burned. We were everybody's friend because we were doing work for them and not getting paid. When it went wrong, it went very wrong. So we were no different than anyone else. We'd bought into a lot of property, and basically because of having a license and things like that, we couldn't run from it the way other people did. So we ended up being busy fools for a lot of years there, keeping banks happy and collecting rent, giving it to a bank. And then October would come and we'd turn on to pay a tax bill on rent that was already gone to banks. But look, it took a while to get our heads back above water, but we did. We learned a lot along the way. And the rental market really, as I said, not just helped us to get through the tough times, but when things started to come back again in 2011 and 12, we suddenly had the buyers. All the renters were the new buyers. So in 2004 to 6, it was all investors. But suddenly all the properties that were being repossessed were being sold to owner-occupiers. And we had them.
Yeah.
So we had a natural market there. And like it was nice because it felt like you were helping people that had rented off you for 4, 5, 6 years. Suddenly they were buying a house and everybody was happy.
You know, it's interesting what you're describing there, kind of coming into the marketplace. We were almost immediately into a crash that we did not think would take as long to play out. And in fact, just this morning, I was speaking to another independent agent in the south of the country, and she was making the point that, During the crash, a lot of the larger, longer established agents, the ones that would have been established 20 years before yours, when 2006, 2007, 2008 hit, they had a lot of fat built up in the business. So they were able to just kind of hunker down, hold tight in the expectation that things would get better. And they never really got better because when the market improved, regulations became more onerous, compliance became more expensive, consumer demands became more demanding, so things it never really went back to normal. It just seemed to get increasingly difficult, and I mean, the challenges in
I think a
recent
lot of
years.
those agents were probably going off the point of, I think a lot of those agents you're on about were probably in the game 10 and 20 years before me. If a lot of them came out and were honest, they were very deep in the property market themselves when it went wrong. And not a lot of people would be open and upfront and come out and say, yeah, I was one of those. Sorry, yeah. And again, I think that's people's frame of mind was not good when it came to coming back and working hard again. They did some great years where I spoke to an agent and he'd say, yeah, I'd go in the office at 11:30 on a Monday to find three deposits had arrived. And I didn't even know which houses they were for. It was great, you know. I would never have experienced that level of handiness, if you know what I mean. So basically, we were always at the working end of it. So we didn't mind getting stuck back into it, if you know what I mean. It was.
There's so many advantages to starting a business during a difficult time. And so startup in itself is difficult. So your first 3 years don't you essentially almost don't count because you're in survival mode all the time. And to go from there to the crash and to this long drawn out recovery, I again we've as we mentioned there, you've got offices in Mayo and Galway. The west of Ireland, I do believe, had a very different experience to maybe the greater Dublin area in terms of recovery, to the point where I do believe there's some towns that just never recovered. I drive
Well, I can
through them.
take you back to my own little village, Clonfad. Clonfad is in between 5 miles to Dunmore, County Galway, 5 miles to Ballyhonest, County Mayo. But Clonfad was one of the little villages that was torn apart by what happened in 04 to 06. They gave us the Section 23 and Section 50 tax breaks. My little village had 30 houses in it. There was 100 built. Now, people drive through the village still today. When I tell them there's 100 new houses in it, they laugh at me. They say there's no 100 houses, but there's 50 in one estate alone. There's 23 in another, 14 in another. Another guy built 9 units. The council put 8 or 10 and another 3 houses in the back. So there was 100 houses built. The last 10 houses in one of those estates weren't sold. They were badly vandalized. And in 2012, a guy bought all 10 at an auction for 120,000. So like, they devastated our village. Like it was, you know, yeah. And like then, as you left Clonfad, you were going Granlahan, Ballinlough, Tullskelpin, all the way up to Carrick and Shannon, and it was the same. It was just a whitewash with houses, a lot of them not finished. I approached the council at one stage, Roscommon County Council, for houses in Tullsk. I offered them 16 houses, half finished at 50,000 each or 100,000 completed. I turned them down. I had to go further and ask people higher up the ladder, say, please come back to me. I don't know. I don't understand what's going on here. I'm offering you houses at one, it was a nearly half the build cost. And they came back, and the answer to me was, well, Kevin, the people who say they need these houses and want these houses don't want to live in Tulse. So we had houses, but we had them in the wrong places. Now, in Clonfad, where I'm on about, they were on about knocking those 10 houses. They never did. The cheapest I'd have sold one of those 10 houses for was 95,000, and the last one I'd have sold there now, I think I got 165.
That's not the cheapest that we saw in the country, and we did see like some of the ghost estates did have to be knocked. And I think, sometimes it's hard to almost remember back to a time when we didn't have a housing minister, but it's not that long ago. And I remember we had a junior minister with responsibility for housing, Jan O'Sullivan, a Labour Party, Jan O'Sullivan. And, she did Trojan work in terms of the ghost estates, trying to make safe what could be made safe, trying to connect the dots between the local authority housing lists and those ghost estates that could be finished, that could be kept, that could be kitted out. And I sometimes think that maybe,
Well, I tell you,
the work that was done
the
then
tax
never
that
gets
came to bite
acknowledged.
us there was 2009 to 2000, was it 12 or 13, the NPPR. So these houses were there. Some of them were rented, some of them weren't. Most of them were tied up because the people that bought these tax break properties had multiple properties in Dublin. They only bought them for the tax break. Some of them didn't know where the houses were. And they, when he came, we rang banks and said, "Look, I've got someone to be interested in the house. Are you thinking about selling it?" And they're looking at the problems we have with this guy are so big. What's down there in Clonfad doesn't matter, not even the least. You know what I mean? That, so you know, and then we would get a sale agreed, and we'd be going through, take months to get a sale done. But that the NPPR tax, and again, the local thing we're looking for, started off with, was it 1,000, then it was 2,000, then it was 4,000 by the time we were selling these houses. And they're like, "What do you want 4,000 for? You'd go in before and knock with the digger and knock it. And now you're looking for 4,000 because it sat there doing nothing for a few years." But you know, they just didn't, they weren't open-minded on it, if you know what I mean. They were slow to, but again, it's similar to the planning. The planning didn't, they didn't stop the planning until it was too late. And then they were too slow to get it moving again. Like, they didn't stop it till it was far too late. You know, so I'd say the crash was well and truly in. And then they waited again for 4 or 5 years before they decided to loosen the strings again. Like, it didn't make, you know, they're just too, everything is too slow happening, if you know what I mean. That it's,
Well, that's something that hasn't changed, and I don't see it happening. I don't see it changing, unless there's really political, a radical political reform, which I just don't see happening with even with the next party that's likely to come in. But let's talk about what is actually available. So for people who are looking to buy, sell, rent
well,
locally.
if you take Mayo there, if you go to daf.ie this morning, Mayo, they're saying there's 823 properties available. I'd beg to differ on that one. I'd say there's about half that. If you go to My Home, you have 425. Now, that's a lot more realistic. If you check the back pages of the daf.ie, the 823, what you have there is, oh, historical sites and things for sale that have been there since the day dot. And basically, he's wiping off the website. You know what I mean? I also might say, "Well, look at this, my site, and I'm entitled to have it for sale." Yeah, but in numbers, it's distorted. I mean, you're probably looking at a lot closer to 400 properties available, not eight.
And in terms of budget range, because one of the things that, and you might be able to talk about this, since COVID, obviously with remote working changed things, people were coming out renting because they wanted cheaper rents coming out. I don't believe, or I don't buy into the argument that people only choose rural Ireland because it's cheaper. I just don't buy into that.
Well,
It is cheaper, and I think it's a consideration.
it was a great reason to take a look at us. Like, I mean, if you're in Dublin, and at the time I would have been meeting people that were paying 2,000 rent in Dublin, and particularly it was your Googles and your Facebooks, and these guys released them, so they could come down and rent off us at 800 at the time. So why wouldn't a couple come down and rent on us at 800? So long as we had the broadband, it made no difference to them. They were working from home,
But
so they didn't
what has your
compromise.
experience been though now? And I know, I think it's still early days after COVID to see, but I mean, are you seeing people who were renting looking to buy? Are you seeing people stay and want to actually put their kids into school and or are you seeing people exit?
No, to be honest, I don't think these people are 100% sure whether they have to go back to the office or not. I've spoke to people and they told me that we've another year, you know, but they're still not sure that then they might want us back one day a week, 3 days a week. It's not, they're not sure. So they can't seem to work that one out. 1 second, no, I'm in trouble here with the battery.
You're fine.
Okay, no, so
No,
I
continue.
wasn't
You're
charging.
grand. So look, but then tell me. So I think that sounds accurate, by the way. We're a good year off being able to assess, okay, what's the impact of remote working and things like that? And what are people choosing? But what I'm really interested in, because I don't think I think the National Planning Framework is way off in this. I think our the CSO stats will, as always, be years behind. But I think for the first time in, well, for probably for the first time ever, people can choose. They don't need to be tied with to a certain distance or commuting distance of work. They get to choose where they live. And I think increasingly we are seeing people choose rural Ireland. And I know we've got increasing urbanisation, and that's choice and necessity driven. But I do believe we're seeing more people choosing rural Ireland, but none of our policies recognize that, acknowledge it, or support it. So, what are you experiencing when you meet people who are looking to rent or buy in a rural area and they're not from the area?
The people we'd have met, we originally thought they were looking for the cheaper rent in the countryside. They weren't. What they actually wanted was a nice apartment in a bigger town. So they wanted to be, as in around here, it was a Claremorris, Ballinrobe, you know what I mean? The They want getting over to Castlebar if they could, but didn't have to go as far as Castlebar. But they didn't want to be in the countryside. A lot of cases of these people that lived in the city, they wouldn't be drivers. You know, they can drive, but they wouldn't want to be driving. So they wanted apartments in town, you know what I mean? And they wanted their amenities there, you know.
And what impact is that having on the town? So, I think I mentioned before we came in here that I was out in Headford over the long weekend, and there's a huge initiative there, Reimagine Headford, trying to revitalize. And we're seeing this across all of rural Ireland, market towns and villages being essentially revitalized, regenerated,
But
and there's great government supports to do it.
Headford probably has an advantage there. Tuam was a town that didn't do awfully well, even though it was very close to Galway City. But over the last 2, 3 years, Tuam has taken off immensely because people just can't afford the city. So they kept coming out further and further. And they didn't particularly want Tuam, but they ended up in Tuam. And they got value at the start. Now there's no value left in Tuam. Headford now would be one of those, I'd call them satellite towns that. You know, you can live there and still have your ties to the city. One person can work in the city and one could work from home. So it would be classed. Like, I mean, over the other side, they were trying to shove you out to Athenry and over that side out to Clarenbridge Bridge and things like that. But Clarenbridge Bridge was always too expensive. I mean, you wouldn't get looking out there for 450, 500. But then Athenry came up, it's a good road out to Athenry. Certain well-known big building companies seem to buy land out there and. They did, yeah. They built a few houses, and those were kind of small, bit more affordable in the city, but not an awful lot. You know, they
But
weren't.
Athenry again is another example of a town that was the town centre, an old market town, was most definitely in decline. Huge levels of retail vacancy. And I suppose that's really my question, where you've got more people coming to rural Ireland, whether they're in towns or villages or in the countryside. Is that having a positive impact on the towns, or is it too early to see that yet?
It's not having a great positive the impact. Ballyhonest town here again would have been it's completely taken over by non-nationals, if you know what I mean. There was a lot of factories here and they employ a lot of people, but it was people who brought in to work and an awful lot of their money leaves Ireland first evening. So they literally eat and survive, a lot of them, you know what I mean? They're not doing anything for the local economy.
Karan Auctioneering deals with both residential and commercial. So can we just maybe take a look at the commercial side for a moment in terms of, one trend that I'm seeing in every town I go to, if I haven't visited it in 2 or 3 years, a market town, everything from the bank to the post office seems to be turning into co-working
Residential.
hubs, with no co-working hubs and coffee shops.
Yeah.
So what's happening on the commercial side?
Ballyhonest is your perfect example of that. We lost all three banks. We lost Bank of Ireland, AIB, and Ulster Bank. Unbelievable that we lost all three banks. That was just the start of it. Basically, most of the commercial is gone. There's, as you said, we've coffee shops and hairdressers, nail bars. It's very hard for anyone to open anything else in the town. You know, it's
So what do you have at the moment? Have you vacancy, or are people already looking to turn those into residential?
In the last 12 months to 24 months, we've seen a lot of that turn into residential because basically the need for rent in the town was unreal. I'm not sure it's always good what's happened because the last five or six buildings that were converted went to kind of rent a room instead of apartments because basically they were too costly to get them up to standard for apartments. So they've gone ahead and done them as rent a room. So it's okay. It helps. It's a help. But I don't see it as a long-term solution because those people will have to team up with somebody else along the way. And, you know, there's no way that all these rent rooms can be sustainable long-term.
One of the other trends that I was certainly reported as being more pronounced in Mayo and rural Galway was the initiative to turn country pubs into residential. Now, I've only seen a handful of successful projects, and only one of those was in the countryside. The rest actually were pubs in towns, in smaller towns, being converted into residential. Is that something that you're seeing?
Yeah, we have lost, I'd say, six, seven pubs in the town to residential. And they started off, some of them, they converted upstairs first. And then when they saw the rental income from it, they just said, give up and sell the license now, because the word also was the license was going to lose its value. So a license is 50 to 60 grand, and they're talking about bringing in this more like a wine bar type license, a bit like the Hackney for the taxi. And if the people were afraid they were going to, that 50 grand was going to pop. Like, I mean, buildings were, rough old buildings were only worth 150, 200,000 anyway. So if you can get 50 grand for the license, why not jump before you're pushed? So yeah, it's we lost a lot of pubs now, to be honest.
Kevin, part of an estate agent's job, I believe, or an auctioneer's job, I believe, and I think this is even more true in rural areas, is not just to promote the properties that you're listing, it's to promote the place, and I know, I've spoken to estate agents up and down the country, and I tend to think that independent agents are better at this maybe than franchise, and that maybe has just been my experience of the estate agents I've been dealing with. But I believe that there is, at the end of the day, we know, while I'm a huge proponent of prop tech and technology, we do know it's a human business, it's a service business, and you're in a place. So it's a very place-based business. So while the place you service is much larger in terms of geographic area than most estate agents, I'd imagine, you're still promoting a place. So you want to serve people within that place, but you also want to attract new people to it.
Of
So
course.
everything that you're telling me today, what kind of hope do you have for the large market towns that you're trying to sell properties in? Where's the success going to come from? Where's the placemaking initiatives? Where's the inward investment, both public and private sector?
I suppose we need more jobs that pay better, basically. You know what I mean? I said you can end up in a situation where you have majority of people earning just above minimum wage. It's very hard to create a town around that. Like some of the better, the American companies pay a lot better, if you know what I mean? And a good, say, tune there now in particular would be that. You have Medtronics and some of those. So some of those, if we could get them out of the cities and locate them out to some of the bigger towns, not right in the town, but on the edge of town. Some of them would create employment and at a level that would be, let people reinvest, people reinvest back into the town and get, again, people using the local businesses. Again, like we'd be struggling there with small corner shops and things like that. They're family owned, and I have a feeling once we lose family this time, that's it. There's nobody to come to rescue it.
That feels like the same scenario with some of the small family farm holdings as well.
Exactly. Yeah. It's down here. I mean, the family farm around here would be probably more 40 to 60, 70 acres, and of that, 20 acres is usually rubbish. You know what I mean? It's there might be only farming 40 acres of good land, and then you have the younger farmers coming up that are have their way about them, so they're having to rent two or three places. It's good, but like they're under too much pressure. The what they make out of it, I really don't know how they do it. How they can get themselves up in the morning at 5:30 to do work before they go to work. To be renting somebody else's land, paying somebody 200 euros an acre for land, and then purchasing an animal, trying to take a chance on making a profit on it, and the vet is out every other day. And again, regulations for them is just as bad. Paperwork coming out their ears, and
There's definitely a sense across government policy of almost not wanting or treating settlement in rural areas like it's not normal. So restricting planning for one-off homes, and just in the last few days we saw in the typical manner that government tends to kite fly it's a really lazy approach to policy making, kite flying these ideas to see what kind of public reaction you get. But just before the weekend, we saw news reports there of tax plans to discourage new estates in remote areas. So essentially proposals from government that could lead to new taxes or levies on greenfield site developments outside of built-up urban areas, or I suppose the converse of that is tax relief for developments of brownfield sites within urban areas, which, by the way, the latter I actually think makes sense. But if we penalise or discourage new estates in more remote areas, We are not allowing one-off homes, even for people to be able to continue farming, the next generation to continue farming. Like, what do you see as the future of rural Ireland in the areas you're working?
Well, to be honest, I have a great view on rural Ireland because I'm from here and I see everybody is doing their best to make the best of it. I'm very worried that the rules that are being made are not being made in Ireland, they're being made in Europe. And I don't think our political parties have put the best people out there. I think rules are being made 4 and 5 years ahead of time in Europe, and then they're shoved down our necks when they get here, because I don't think it matters who's in power. If the rule was made 4 and 5 years ago in Europe, it doesn't matter who's in power because they just get to enforce it. And
Yeah.
it's very easy for them to say, well, sorry, it's not me. It was, the other guys were here when that was in, you know what I mean? So I think it's Europe we need to get a handle on. I think we need to get back into telling Europe to piss off with it, you know?
Well, look, I don't think the Irish government is blame-free here at all. I mean, where are our rural advocates for sure? So yes, there's European policy, but European policy is fed into by all of the member states. So actually we should be feeding into that in a much better way.
Yeah,
So
that's
for
agree.
example, so say the vacant and derelict homes, it's something that has become a bit of a hobby horse here on the show, but it is so frustrating that we welcomed the vacant and derelict homes grant scheme with open arms because it is so necessary. It is a real way to unlock the potential and waste across rural Ireland. And yet the implementation of the policy has been so poor. For about a year, every time I spoke to an estate agent, I would ask them, did they have anybody who successfully came through the scheme? And a full year of asking that question, each person had to say, no, we've had loads who tried. We've had people who sale agreed properties. We've had people who tried for 6 and 8 months, couldn't get anything. And last year, we did see the stats bear that out to be true, and only this week we see new stats that showed only one in 30 applicants for the vacant and derelict homes property grants actually received payment. 1 in 30. How can we revitalize
Well,
derelict
I
and vacant
suppose
homes?
let's go back to the beginning when it was first announced. It created wildfire on the older properties. It possibly added 30,000 to the value of derelict properties in the countryside in particular, not so much in the town, but in the countryside. The local authorities, I don't believe, were fully aware of how much dereliction was out there. I think they miscalculated by a long shot, and they had funds in place, but nowhere near the funds they needed. So the original rules for you to get the money would have been A, but they ended up being C because basically they didn't have the funds to fund the applications that came at them. And then suddenly in the background we're hearing that actually that money was designated for town centre redevelopment rather than rural. So we wanted inside speed zones, not outside speed zones. They were going out doing assessment on houses. Like, I mean, you couldn't show them a pile of stones and galvanized thrown on top of it and saying, I want to revive this one. They would just take one look and say, no, not suitable. So they kept every option open. And again, same as anywhere else, there's just too much paperwork involved from their side. Tom has to say yes, Pat has to say yes, Mary say yes. You've got then the National Roads Authority might have to say yes. It should have been just simple as if I'm willing to do the work. And I'm willing to put my back into it, you should let me. But then, if I do all the work myself, I can't invoice for my work I've done. Therefore, I can't draw down the grants. So, I must hire in an established builder who's going to be charging VAT. I have to use an engineer who's charging me, anywhere between 4 and 8,000 euros to do sign offs. And suddenly, I'm bogged down in do I need all this, or am I better off just buy the house? And just do it myself. Let my dad and my brothers and my uncles and everybody do a little bit of work and get the house up and running.
The way those houses would have originally been built,
Yes.
undoubtedly. As an estate agency or an auctioneering practice with offices across Mayo and Galway, surely when this scheme was introduced, you must have seen this as a potential pipeline because
Of course, yes. I
the
mean,
sheer volume of
as I said,
dereliction.
we immediately started advertising properties left, right, and centre. And we did sell quite a few of them. I won't lie to you, they sold quite well. But as I said, it probably added up to 30,000 to something that we'd have sold before. I'd have valued it at 25, 30,000. Suddenly it was 55 and 60.
But
And then,
did these Sell, not subject to any grant. They just sold.
Yeah, they sold because people just believed it was a case of I must own the property before I can apply. So they had them purchased before they realized.
And have you actually tracked any of those sellers? Like, have any of them
There's
kind of gotten caught, or those
there is, you
buyers?
know,
Sorry.
there's a handful of people did, but
Yeah.
different people had to do different things. I mean, the grants that you'll see, there's a figure of up to, I think I saw 103,000 there in one day, you know, like it's
Okay.
crazy. But the SEI grant in particular was brilliant. I mean, that 30 grand is there for anybody nearly. You know, people just need to look into it. Then you had the vacant and you had the derelict. Now the derelict one kind of gets a bit unusual. What is derelict? If you're dealing with dereliction, you'll probably have no septic tank. If you have no septic tank, you have no plan up. So then you're all the way back to doing plan up. Like, you know, we could sell a house with a very poor quality septic tank and you can update it. But if they came out and inspected it and said, oh no, this is a new septic tank required here. So you're back doing planning. So what have you bought then? You haven't even really bought yourself a good site because you are actually back doing planning.
Do you know, it feels like a really good policy, a really needed policy, and one that
Yeah,
we
yeah.
just were so excited about, and it has just been implemented in such a bad way. And I know I've spoken about it many times before, but you know, in frustration, we phoned some of the local authorities, and actually one local authority told us that we should find a builder who could carry out the work and wait until after the grant was paid in full to get paid. So I don't know what kind of unicorn builders the local authorities think are out there, but they are just so disconnected to reality. But it seems incredibly unfair, because actually what one more honest local authority said to us was that, look, really, this is designed for people who have a derelict property on their own land. So
Yeah.
essentially, you know,
Or a
so
derelict
an adult.
property in town that was in the family, you see, and that's what I'm saying, that
Yeah.
the idea was to try and tidy up the towns a little bit. And that's where the idea came from. And they said if an odd one on the edge of town pops up, we don't mind throwing a few quid at it as well. But as I said, they didn't see coming at them what came at them. A tsunami of applications came at them, and suddenly they didn't know what to do. They didn't, so they started sending people out to turn people down basically up front, you know, on the first inspection telling you it's not suitable
So,
or
like, given the challenges and the limitations, I suppose I have a couple of questions around that. First of all, you know, what across your two offices, what are you selling? Who are you selling for? But what are you selling? There's so little
Honestly, we
stock.
are selling absolutely everything. Something that Sailor Green today is, it was a commercial business here. It was an orthodontist, had a practice here in the town. He's got out and nobody took it over, which I can't believe, but that's the situation we find ourselves in. That's been sold, that's going back to residential. We'd have sold a very big, decent family home there last week for 420. You know, that's really good money for around here, if you know what I mean. But again, that's UK cash coming in. The locals would never have given that kind of money for it.
And so tell me, your pipeline of buyers, has that changed since COVID? You know, and I would imagine that it changed during COVID and maybe immediately after COVID, but now where's the baseline emerging for buyers?
You see, you have your first-time buyers always trying to get into the market. I mean, they're always there. Again, the system is too good in Ireland for people, and for them to get off the system to come in to buy a house, it can be very hard to cross that line for them. But a certain amount of people are doing it. They're buying their semi and getting going, and fair play to them. You know what I mean? They're sticking their neck out. That's the basic, you know, them. We still have a lot of investors seem to be cash rich. And if we have the rental of the property and we do the management, they're happy to throw their money at buying a property as long as we'll
So
offer the service.
you're still, I, and again, actually, this is one of the questions that I ask almost every estate agent that we interview. Are they seeing any cash buyers coming into the marketplace? And invariably, the answer is no. A handful of times we'll hear there's the odd one, but invariably the answer is no. So actually, are you seeing something different?
I deal with a lot of cash buyers, yeah. People that have basically successful businesses.
And are they local, or are they people who are looking west for cheaper investment properties?
Well, when I say local, they're here in the west of Ireland. Then we have people that actually went Australia, New Zealand, did okay for themselves as well. those people are plowing money back into the here. We've had companies that are very successful in the area themselves, just buying up property just to house their own workers.
And actually, what is the rental market like at the moment? Because obviously, we've talked a lot about kind of the Galway rental
We
market and the
have
pressure seems to be
30
easing.
people. We have 30 people waiting on property on any given day.
Are they all, or do they tend to be kind of individuals looking for one bed apartments? Are they
No,
more
yeah,
families?
it's two bed and three bed is what we
Two
need there.
beds.
Two bed and three bed is what we need. And we've seen nothing built. There's one estate unfinished here in the town, and guys bought it there. They finished off, I think, about 10 houses, and they're doing four apartments at the minute. That's the only other project we've seen was 18 houses, I think the council did, which again we'd no say act apartheid. All that really did is freed up 18 rental properties.
But 18 rental market or properties being freed up is
Yeah.
something that the market would welcome.
Well, it welcomed it, but it didn't change our demographics of the town, if you know what I mean. It's like we don't have any new houses, and we don't have any, nobody's even put in for planning permission. Because like the cost, like having a site, the build cost is way, way, way too much yet. I mean, I don't know how we're gonna fix it, but we need to fix it.
Yeah, but by the way, that's not even taking into consideration the latest policy that's been floated there, as in higher tax to disincentivize development in that area, and yet there's a clear demand.
Yeah.
So it just seems that policy is completely disconnected from the reality on the ground. And as always, despite the fact that we've access to better data, the government just doesn't seem to know how to use the better data that it has. I suppose finally, just because we are, and I don't tend to talk politics on this show, but the reality is we're coming into a really interesting political time in Ireland over the next year to 18 months. You know, I suppose it's unfair to ask you what you expect to see, but what do you feel needs to happen to be able to revitalize the areas that you're talking about and actually ensure that people
I
can
think
live?
whoever goes in next is walking into a cesspit. I think there's so much done wrong at the moment. It's basically you're walking on very thin ice, and I don't care what party goes in next. I think they're walking themselves into a mess. You'll probably see a big protest vote. Sinn Féin will probably do well. The new independent party will probably do well. I know some of them people have great time for them people. And I kind of half wish they wouldn't do what they're doing because I have a feeling they're just being walked into a net. And it's a case of a lot of promises have been made, a lot of money has been spent. And I have a feeling whoever goes in next will find that there is no purse when you get there. And it's a case of, you know, you can say you're going fixing it with what, you know. Sinn Féin have been a long time threatening from the outside to fix it. But who are they going to tax when they come in, and how long will it take them to get their hands on those taxes to make any significant change to housing? Because somebody has to pay for it; it won't pay for itself. So if they want to give houses to people that are maybe second and third generation that have never worked, that's fine. But somebody's going to have to pay for it. So we can only presume it's corporate they're going then.
So
So if
what do
they
you see for the future of housing?
Again, I'm saying if they loosened up the planning a bit, then site value should drop a little bit. See, site values still stay up on the basis that they're keeping them close to their chest. So I'm not saying I want planning permission absolutely everywhere, but at the same time, it should be easier to get planning, cheaper to get planning. And then the next thing we have to address is the build cost. And again, I don't think Ireland has much control over the build cost because most of the stuff was bloody imported, and the cost of putting it together, you know, fuel and you know, your oil and your diesels and everything is
Well,
cost.
I to be honest, we do have control over the build process to a certain extent. So we're seeing more off-site and modern methods of construction being used, and that can certainly, while it might not drive down initial costs,
Well,
it will speed up the process.
We have a very successful firm in Swinford there, Red Baron, Big Red Baron, and like they're up, they're getting better day a day, week on week, very successful. And I agree with what they're doing, but I don't know why people are making such a big thing about it. I was in construction for 20 years. We had timber frame houses 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That's all they are. You know, I don't know why people keep calling them modular. I mean, at the end of the day, you can build a timber frame house off-site. That's been happening for years. And in Ireland, you do need a block around it. You know, anything else is not good enough in Ireland. But whether we have, you must put a block around it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, a stop, you know, that's it. I mean, so if we have the planning and we have the sewers and we have the water and that, and we have street lighting, we've seen it in Clamorris there when they decided to build, I think it was 80 units for Ukrainians. The diggers went in on Friday, and within 6 months, 18 units were finished.
Again, 3D modular homes built to a lifespan of 60 years, high quality. I mean, arguably where we are almost looking for too high standards actually for temporary housing. So what we're building is not temporary at all. It's very much permanent
Well,
housing.
again, I'm told that the raft foundations that went under those houses would hold up a two-story. So maybe
Yeah.
somebody in the back office is paying attention and they're saying, okay, if these houses are temporary, whether they're 4 years or 24 years, when they come down, we'll have a developed site ready to
Yeah.
stick 18 houses on.
You know, some joined up thinking is exactly what we need in relation to Big Red Barn. Actually, I've interviewed Donal, and you're absolutely right. He was one of the leaders in this space. So it's something that we very much welcome. But look, I think you're right in terms of planning for what's needed. But unfortunately, everything that's coming out in terms of government policy is leading us to believe it's going in the opposite direction, which is
But
a
again,
real
I suppose
problem.
ask the question, where are these policies coming from? Are they European?
At the end of the day, we get the politicians we deserve. We elect people into power, so it doesn't matter whether it's Irish or European. The reality is, we have there. It is the member states who create European law. So the reality is, it comes down to the people that we are electing and holding to account. And there is not a day goes by where I don't ask, where are the advocates for rural Ireland? I'm not seeing any of them. I'm not seeing any of them. I don't see any
We might
advocates for rural Ireland.
send Michael Fitzmaurice out to Europe yet, and they might have to listen to him.
You know, listen, I think we're in for an interesting time, but I would like to see rural Ireland much better represented. And I think there has become this old or this really dangerous way of thinking that somehow our rural Ireland is this thing to be preserved, or this museum to be visited at weekends. And I think there's really been a disconnect that rural Ireland is a living, dynamic place where people want to create not just homes, but lives and businesses, and businesses need people, and people need facilities. And so there's the potential of rural Ireland is being stymied so much. And I just, again, I don't know where the advocates
Again,
for
going
rural
off on
Ireland are.
something else there, like Galway is our city. Galway City has been trying to do a ring road for, is it 25 years? If we can't get a ring road, how can we build houses? You know,
Kevin, that's a perfect note to finish on, because that is definitely a conversation for another day. We have
no, but
argued so much about the
if we
ring
can't,
road.
no, but if we can't
Yeah.
fix that, we
Yeah.
can't fix anything, because until you put a bit of forward planning in, and
Yeah.
like, genuinely, the road that they're putting in at the minute is in on top of the city. I don't know who put it in there or why they've agreed to it. It's ridiculous where they're trying to put it.
But you know, it is a very clear, interesting example of everything that's wrong with infrastructure planning, infrastructure and planning in Ireland. So definitely one to end on, because that is definitely a topic for another day. But thank you so much
Thank
for
you.
sharing your time and expertise. That was Kevin Curran, estate agent with Curran Auctioneering in Mayo and in Galway. My thanks, as always, to Katie Tallon and to the production team at Hear Me Roar Media. And huge thanks to our show sponsor, daft.ie, Ireland's most visited property website. In the meantime, thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Property Roundup. Please be sure to check out all of the other Irish and international real estate and construction shows here on iPropertyRadio.com.